This is The Women of Letters, a podcast dedicated to the TV show Supernatural and everything fandom. Watch a horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Horror movie right there on my TV. Shocking me right out of my brain. Shocking me right out of my brain.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Women of Letters podcast, a podcast all about Supernatural, its fandom, and just about anything else Amy and I feel like talking about, to be honest. Hi, Amy.
Hi, Jules. How are you doing today?
Good. I was going to say something professional sounding, like what episode we're up to. I think it's 37 or 8 or something, but I totally forgot to look that up. So,
good on you. I wouldn't have a clue.
Who cares?
Well, that's pretty cool, though, if it's like 37 or 8. That's a lot.
Well, I'm always checking up on our website. And, of course, you can find us, Women of Letters, at the Podomatic website and also on iTunes. Just put in Women of Letters and you can download us for free on iTunes.
Yeah, there might be something about half hour in there. Just ignore that.
Yes, I think we're still listed as Women of Letters half hour. Also on iTunes, I think most of the broadcasts are listed as containing explicit material. Yes. I don't know how they know that.
I don't either. How do they know that? I wondered about that.
They must have some algorithm that, like, just can sense the word fuck in a record.
There must be. Because I actually thought maybe there was something that when you were up, because you do it, Jules does the uploading, and I thought that maybe there was something that you were ticking, like a, I mean, because we don't actually have to upload it to iTunes. We upload it to Podomatic and does it.
Yes, it automatically uploads from Podomatic to iTunes. There is a rating system on Podomatic, but I never tick it, I don't think, unless I accidentally do. So anyway, that's where you can find us, and yes. Amy and I both tweet out links to it when we remember.
Yes.
Thank you, everyone, for your wonderful reaction to our slightly drunk 200th episode podcast. It was really lovely to hear. Well, it was lovely to talk about the episode straight after it aired, because we don't usually get the chance to do that. And it was also great to get your feedback on the interwebs.
On our drunkenness.
Yes. Someone did say there was only an occasional slurring of words. So,
I think I was a bit slurry by the end because I was still drinking through it.
So was I, and I will admit to not having really listened to it since.
I started listening to it and went, well, I don't think I should listen to this.
Let's just say I think we captured the joie de vie of the episode very well. Although now I've gone into this weird space where any of the songs makes me cry. So, or, you know, if I cried, they would make me cry. So I haven't watched it for a while now, and I'm weird like that. I'll sometimes binge on an episode I like when it first comes out, and then I like to leave it alone for a while, and then come back to it afresh. But I have had the songs on my phone, I have to say.
Yeah. I was singing them at work, singing them on the way to work most days for about 2 weeks. But I would get really sad in Single Man to keep making me cry, so I had to stop.
Anyway, and it was wonderful because it was which we haven't spoken about, the convention at Burbank was only a few days after the episode, and so it was great that a few of the members of the cast of that episode, I know Katie Sarif, who played Marie, got to go along to karaoke. I know, yeah. Rob Thompson was there during karaoke and a few others. So that was very exciting, and from all reports, as usual, the Burbank Convention was much, much fun.
Yes, it looked like a lot of fun. It had me going, should we go to Burbank maybe next year?
I think it might have been in my drunken post 200th episode viewing where I may have been looking up airfares for the following day to go to LA.
I know, absolutely. been there, done that.
Because we have, dear listeners, we have this thing in Australia where you can leave, you know, I could have left on Thursday morning Australian time and got to LA Thursday morning LA time. So it's
before you left.
Before I left. So it all starts to seem wonderfully possible until you realise little things like, you know, work and money and that
you lose that day on the way back.
Well, so that's the other thing. It's a bit hard to creep back into work because you've
got to take 2 days off at the other end.
Damn it.
Damn you, work.
And I should, we should mention this weekend, the members of the SPN family around the globe. Wales Comic Con is enjoying the presence of Alana Huffman and Mark Shepherd this weekend. So I won't even attempt to do a Welsh accent, but I hope everyone in Wales at Wales Comic Con has a wonderful time with those two, the King and Queen of Hell. And, of course, in Australia we've got the adorable Gil McKenney and Tamo Pennicott, who are here for Supernova. They were in Adelaide last week and up in Brisbane this weekend, which narrowly escaped being destroyed by a hailstorm. I've had a few people on Twitter asking me if I was okay. Brisbane is actually 2,000 kilometres from Melbourne, so thank you for your concern, but I'm fine.
I did see Gil loitering around Sydney as well, who was at Bondi Beach, and I nearly tweeted him going, come over to the north side, Bondi Beach.
He went to the Katy Perry concert.
He did.
And I know some of some people, SPN fans I know on Facebook, ran into him at the Katy Perry concert. So there you go. Yep. He's been out and about. So great to see them having a good time, and hope we'll get them and more members of Supernatural here next year.
Yes, let's hope so.
Anyway, was there anything else we were going to talk about?
Were we going to...
Oh, yes, convention guest. You announced it, Amy.
Well, very exciting. Of course, the boys announced that Jeffrey Dean Morgan will be coming to Vegas Con.
Can we just go back a bit? Because I think for people who weren't on Twitter during a few hours, so it was the Sunday at Burbank.
Yeah, and everything exploded.
Boys did their gold panel, the gold breakfast panel, which is now a panel, no breakfast. And then after that, somehow there was an announcement that at the end of that, during their main panel,
there would be an announcement.
There would be an announcement. So, of
the course, announcement of the announcement.
Supernatural fandom broke down with what could it be speculation. I don't think anyone was correct. I saw everything from the show being cancelled to the show being renewed for 20 years.
They've signed on for the next 5 years.
Everyone on the cast and or their partners was pregnant with twins. Show was moving to LA to film. What else did I see? There were, of course, a few that were deliberately humorous. But, yes, it was something I don't think anyone had guessed.
No.
So, sorry to interrupt. So go
no,
back
that's
to,
all right. And I was at work because, obviously, the...
You work.
Yeah, because I work. I have to afford conventions. Otherwise, I wouldn't be doing it. And, you know, but the convention, that's Sunday, the Burbank is Sunday, and for us that's Monday, obviously. So, you know, we always have the convention sort of happening either first thing in the morning on the Monday or maybe a little later in the day for the later panel, a little later mid-morning. So I think it was like about midday or something, their panel, their later panel. And so I was like waiting on my desk, just waiting for this damn announcement with my phone on my desk and watching everybody while I'm trying to work. And I've been really busy watching everybody talking, and I'm messaging Hazel going, because we're going to Vegas together, and I'm messaging her going, have you seen anything yet? No, why aren't they announcing? Oh my God.
So and then, what did you think it was going to be?
I had no idea. I wasn't making any kind of guesses. I actually had no idea. I was like, what the hell would the announcement be? And yeah.
Wine. That was the other thing.
A lot of people thought it, but I didn't think because I was like on Twitter going, okay, somebody tell me what happened with this announcement. How did this announcement get announced? Who announced that there was going to be an announcement? Tell me about the whole backstory here. And then I was like, well, Gary announced that the guys were going to make an announcement. I thought that's not going to be, it's got to be something. I figured it must be something creation related. It was my guess. I couldn't think what it was. I thought maybe there was going to be another con or there's already like 25
cons next year. So I don't think they can fit in another one.
But I was like, I can't think of what it would be. But because Gary said they're going to make an announcement, I was like, well, and my friend, I think Jamie told me that. And I was like, oh, well, maybe it's something. Anyway, I didn't know, but I did not think it would be JDM being announced, and I was so excited.
Oh, I think so everyone was. He's been the dream con guest since the beginning, and you know, I think everyone had become you know, sort of resigned to the fact that he was never going to be a con guest. So both a wonderful surprise, and I think yes, the grabby hands across the internet for
tickets.
You know, tickets and photo ops and autographs, like, give it all to me now.
I know. Well, I mean, that they didn't, and because they, and then they put up on their site that they weren't going to put out any, you know, put out any information. They didn't even name him on the creation site. They called him the very special guest because they said they couldn't actually do anything or say anything until everything was locked down with him. The boys were allowed to announce it, probably because Jeffrey said they could, but Creation weren't allowed to do anything. So then the waiting happened where you're like, oh my God, but what if the photos drop in the middle of the night while I'm asleep and I can't get... Anyway, but thankfully the Supernatural fandom took care of me, and I had people, as soon as they went up, I had people DMing me going, the JDM tickets are up, the JDM tickets are up. So I managed to get solos and a trio. I'm just going to lose my shit when I walk into that. I mean, my God, oh, that's yes. going to be a very overwhelming experience. And I got a couple of autos as well because I want him to sign my poster that is ridiculously covered in everybody's signature. And also want to get a three shot of the guys and get them all to sign it, because I don't know if I'll ever get that opportunity again.
Oh, so. No, I think it's certainly a one-off. Yeah, well,
they said they're trying to.
Yeah, it's unlikely to be a common occurrence. Let's put it
exactly.
That way.
Maybe he might do the odd one, but he's really busy. He's Jeffrey Dean Goddamn Morgan. And I mean, that's the thing. For me, it's like, sure, he's John Winchester, but he's also Jeffrey Dean Morgan in so many other things that I adore and, you know, shows that I've watched. And, you know, he's a big.
Yeah, not so much recently.
Not so much recently. Not so much recently, but I was like a big. I really like
Magic
City.
City.
Yeah, I loved Magic City.
That's a few years now, isn't it? 3 years?
No, last year I think it was X.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's pretty new. But I really enjoyed that. But he's in lots of movies that I like. Texas Killing Fields was a really good one. That was a fairly recent one.
That was with one of
Sam Worthington. No, well, Sam Worthington.
I was going to say Hemsworth.
No, they all look alike. They all look like Australians.
I think that's my favourite Jeffrey Dean Morgan movie.
It's a really good movie. Really good movie.
Possibly my favourite Worthington movie as well. Big call, I know. It's going to be amazing. As I said, I suspect this all came about, and this is based on nothing at all, people, making this all up. So if you want to go and spread rumours, feel free, but I'm making this all up. But I just have this image of sort of Jared and Jensen maybe, you know, having a drink with Jeffrey or something like that. And
coming up
with this idea is like, look, if you sign on like for the Vegas con, you get a paid weekend with us and we can like reenact the hangover in Vegas and away from the families and everything, and all expenses paid, and
they're gonna have a great time.
And then they had to change everything because the boys were meant to be there on Saturday.
And they moved everything. Jeff could do Sunday. They moved everything to Sunday, which personally I'm really stoked about because I like to finish on the boys. And it's great. Vegas is great, but it's always kind of like I'm there for them. So
own your load early.
You do. And then the Sunday is great. The Sunday's always really great because it's really busy. And we usually actually finish. Well, the last two, there's only been two Vegases. We've done Richard's meet and greet at the end, which has been lovely. Lovely way to round out. And we'll probably do that again, I'd say, if he does it on the Sunday. But, It's always nice at the convention, I think, when the last day is all about the boys, and this time it's going to be all about the boys and Jeff. And then, of course, all the speculation about three of them going to do a panel together? Are they, you know, like, so everybody's like gone crazy. It's awesome news. I'm very excited. I feel like I'm going to be a little bit overwhelmed when I walk. I'm going to have Hazel with me because we're going to share the threesome. Woo!
I do hope they do the three of them together. I think that would be better than Jeffrey on his own, I think.
That's
partly what we all want to see is, you know, the Winchesters back together again. So
I think at least they'll do at least, even if they don't do a whole panel together, I think I wouldn't be surprised if they did
air
like,
quotes gate crashes.
Yeah, quote gate crash and you know, like share part of panel. You know what I mean? I'm sure that there will be a point in time where they're on stage together for a while. Whether the three of them do a panel together or not, I don't know. But, you know, who knows? We won't know until the schedule comes up, like on the Wednesday before the con next year in 103 days.
I was going to say, not long to go now.
103 days.
So that's all the convention news. I do think they've got a little while off. I think the next convention is January.
January. I think it goes San Francisco, Houston, Phoenix, or San Francisco, Phoenix, Houston. Those three, and they're like within. I think it's like San Francisco, Houston are within a week. Then there's a couple of weeks off. Then Phoenix, I think, and then a couple of weeks in Vegas.
Okay.
So it's like, yeah.
And then it's non-stop, and they're both doing hiatus too.
So they then do Seattle, and then that's it for Creation until they come back to do DC, I think, or whatever they do in July. I think it's DC. But in between, yeah, they're both doing Asylum and Justin Bello in Rome. Busy boy.
So I think we worked out the head. Was it 17 conventions next year or something?
It's crazy town.
Oh yeah,
that's a lot.
I want to put money on at what point one of them breaks down in tears.
Can't ask that question one more time.
Too
please
many.
Don't ask us about pranks ever again.
Well, at least people can stop asking about when is there going to be a musical episode.
Yeah, there you go. That's done.
Oh, no, they won't, though, because there'll be one with – what about one with Sam and Dean sing? Anyway, moving on from the musical episode, we've got two episodes to talk about now, both sort of old-fashioned in a way, really, you know, Monster of the Week hunting episodes in some way, although obviously Mythark stuff happening along the way. And the first one we had was episode 6 of this season, Ask Jeeves.
I loved Ask Jeeves.
So the whole premise was very much your Agatha Christie classic sort of 40s, 50s murder mystery, and very, very much not based on but referencing the game which we everywhere else in the world calls Cluedo and Americans call Clue. And so your classic rich family in a mansion and people start getting – knocked off.
Yeah, epically knocked off. Can I say that decapitation is probably my favorite?
Yes.
And for a show that has a lot of decapitations, let's face it, they're not shy with hacking people's heads off. That I think that was my favorite. That was probably one of the most graphic. And I was just sitting there going, I can't believe that they can get away with this. But it was beautiful. It was wonderful. And then what was even better was the tape on the floor later when Dean was walking up the hall, and there was the tape, the body of the the dead body outline of the body, and then the head halfway up the hall. I must have laughed for half an hour.
It was so well done.
It was so beautiful.
And I just wanted to, before we move on from to the story. Didn't want to forget to say we had another episode starting with Impala Porn.
Oh, yes.
So it's been lovely to see. Second episode of Dean fixing up
his paying penance to
fixing
her.
Up the Impala after he had treated her not
shabbily.
Well.
No. He's paying penance to her because he left rubbish in her and called her just a car. And so, and now he's polishing her and making sure she's shiny and beautiful all the time. So, but yeah, the Impala poem was great. And it was just nice again to start with another scene of the boys, you know, being the boys, and also just to have another episode of, I feel like we've, you know, like had these three episodes where we just got to hang out with Sam and Dean while they got to hang out.
Yeah.
You know, so while they were kind of all getting to know each other again and trying to, you know, work on their relationship, we got to hang out with them. And I said to someone, it's been kind of relaxing, which Supernatural is never, but it's like the last few episodes I've felt strangely relaxed while I've been watching the show because
I think we might have mentioned it in the 200th episode, and I know you and I have often talked about the fact that, you know, there's always shit happening in the Supernatural universe, so that there's often no chance for, even when they are just chasing the Monster of the Week, you're always aware that in the background there's some catastrophe, apocalypse, big bad, you know, whatever that they're going to have to get back to. Now, of course, we've still got the Mark of Cain, but really aside from that, there's no big threat looming over them at the moment. And so following Dean's de-demonization, you know, for the first time they have got this space to hang out, and they have got the space to go back to saving people and hunting things and you know, just be two hunters on the road. They're not worrying about you know, the world ending that week. Even the fact, you know, they can't really help Cass, you know, with rounding up rogue angels or that. So, you know, it's there's just them and the car and a hunt, which are proving a bit hard to find. Yeah. But yeah, it's really, and as you say, it's almost relaxing.
It is.
It's, and little touches like, you know, those beginning of the episode with Sam bringing Dean his coffee, his, you know, artisanal brewed coffee.
I didn't understand what Sam meant when he was like, individually brewed, you know, technology. I was like, dude, what? Do you not individually brew all your coffee? Anyway, that was like.
Amy, they're American. They don't individually brew coffee. They make it in like a big bucket thing. Yeah.
So confused by that.
It's a cultural thing. No. It's a cultural thing. We don't think of coffee as being anything other than individually brewed. For some people, this is a revelation even in 2014.
Right.
I know.
I was like, what do you mean, dude? Jeez. But yeah, it was a lovely opening scene, and I really love the fact that you know, that we still get to reference Bobby. And I mean, it was, you know, cleaning up the dust bunnies, and he found Bobby's phone, which I thought was pretty funny. But it's nice that we get to you know, talk about Bobby through this episode and find out, you know, a little bit more about Bobby's history and something that he did during hunting and connection that he made, and that the boys are still so connected to these people. Because I often, and you know, you often get TV shows and someone significant in another person's life on the TV show passes away, and then they're never mentioned again, or barely. But in Supernatural, they're constantly referencing the people who are important that have passed away in their lives, like Bobby or their dad. They still talk about their dad all the time, which is, of course they do. Of course they would, because you do, you know, and they would, because he was a big part of their life and he's their father. So I think it's wonderful that the show does that, because it's something that I think a lot of shows fail at, and they just don't do that. And it really continues to humanize, you know, the brothers and their relationship with people, and make everything seem more real. And I think just, you know, having that continual connection with Bobby, and the way they spoke about him, and that finding out there were other people that knew him, and they're like, wow, you know, we keep finding all this stuff out about Bobby. I think it's great. I really love that.
Yeah, well, and it's excellent world building too.
Yeah,
because
it
does, you know, remind you that, you know, characters like Bobby had a life outside the Winchesters in hunting, and even just character building in the way that, as you say, it gives that added texture when, yes, people don't have amnesia about people who existed in a season before this one.
Yeah, exactly.
And you know, the audience hasn't forgotten them, so it often seems strange in a show when the main characters have forgotten, you know, their loved one.
And it happens all the time. So I always appreciate it when they pull out Dad's book, or they say, so, well, what would you say if Dad said that? You know, I always think that's absolutely fabulous. And for them, I loved that they called Bobby their surrogate father when they were asked about Bobby. And I thought that was really great.
It was interesting too, because in that they didn't try and lie, or, you know, where his, you know, nephews, or that they told the truth. That was sort of a bit of I went, oh, there you go.
They're being a lot more truthful with their names and things these days. They're like throwing those names around left and right.
Yes, we'll talk about that in the next episode. But, I thought that was a nice, you know, to call him their surrogate, like to call him that publicly.
Yeah.
Not in a moment of stress or between themselves or anything, is, you know, solidifies that, you know, relationship, that is actually now how, a couple of years after his death, that's how they think of Bobby in their life.
I thought it was lovely.
It was. And then we were run into another dysfunctional high-class family. What do you call it? Sorry, upper-class family, which I'm always... I love, you know, because Supernatural is very set in a very, very blue collar world, and the rich are always portrayed as being incredibly dysfunctional and horrible people.
Yeah, they are too. These ones were just so funny.
They were hilarious, and some wonderful casting in
this. Oh my gosh, they were brilliant.
It really, they all played their parts very, very well.
And I have to say, it was the most realistic reaction I've ever seen from a couple of women when Sam and Dean walked in the door. Because seriously, I always wonder why everybody doesn't just drop everything and turn and gawp at them because of what they look like. At least these ladies were like, holy cow, you know.
Yes, they were looking at them like they were pieces of pie.
Well, you know, they are tasty.
And I think the exchange between Sam and I'm going to forget her name, Beverly, when she's like, you know, I've aged well like a piece of cheese, and he's lactose intolerant.
It's one of the best lines ever.
Apparently, according to the internet, so is Jared Padalecki.
Is that right? Is he lactose intolerant?
Look, I haven't found the source of the quote, but if you Google Jared Padalecki lactose intolerant, as I did, because that's one of the things that you know I do during these episodes. which is hard. And you'll find this quote. Reproduced a number of times, but I haven't been able to find a source for it. And it's a quote where he talks about being lactose intolerant, but he still likes some specific sort of chocolate chip ice cream, and it's worth the after effects because he loves it so much.
I'm actually in touch with that emotion, Jared Padalecki, FYI.
So it sounds like it does actually come from an interview, and I haven't had the time yet, but I have promised myself I have a little algorithm for being able to find out, usually being able to track down the source of quotes. I could get this one went back to at least, I think it was 2008, where I could find it going back to at least that time. But as I said, because people refuse to follow my citation rules on the internet, I haven't been able to find
damn
out.
Damn, there's slackness on the internet.
Oh, I know.
Jeez.
It's even harder if it's a quote from a convention or something. This sounded more like a print media quote, just from the way it was generally phrased. Con quotes can be harder to track down. If it's print media quote, I can usually do it. So I promise, just because it annoys me, and I don't want to put on the wiki that Jared's
is actually intolerant.
If he is not,
he might be lactose sensitive, maybe.
Who knows and who really cares? But well,
I don't know, but it was such a great line that I guffawed for about 5 minutes afterwards. Jared, because, I mean, you remember, I can't remember. I'm not going to quote the quote, but it was something at a convention, or maybe it was an interview. I don't remember. But I remember Jared talked about how he's like, he does the drama and he prefers to do the drama because he's
the comedy.
Yeah, he's more comfortable doing that because he doesn't think he's really very funny and Jensen's a funny one. Jared's comic timing is golden. He's hilarious and he's so good in, I mean, we know he's a super funny guy anyway in real life, but he's just gold in this episode.
And he gets to play because it's
he gets to play the comedy.
Well, and he gets to be the, you know, sort of the straight guy in the awkward situation. So the comedy comes from, you know, sort of his discomfort. And, oh, my God, the scene with the three of them on the couch.
That's awesome.
And the, look how long his fingers are.
Well, 9 inches.
9 inches.
Did that go on the Paddock page?
Yep.
Good.
There is a page, everyone, on the... on the wiki, there is, of course, Sam's Peen of Death. So there's a page for Sam Winchester's penis, but there is a separate page for Jared Padalecki's penis, which is also known as Cockzilla and the Paddercock. Don't ask me. Thank fandom. So there you go. there were lots of great one-liners.
It was such a funny episode.
In this episode. At the same time, it was a really good mystery as well.
It was a great mystery.
It wasn't obvious of who was killing who. Even
or that it was a shifter either. Like when it was revealed it was a shifter, I was like, ooh, it's a shifter. I mean, I thought maybe because it was two ghosts, but I was like, oh, shifter, that's really cool. I love the shifters, happen to be my favourite monster in the Supernatural universe. love them. So I was like super excited. But yeah, it was a good mystery. It was the cast was beautiful. I mean, they were so funny. Even just their names. I love that the guy was called Dash. I mean,
that wasn't Dash. I mean, Dash looked like he'd stepped out of Central Casting for Hunk of the Week.
He was awesome.
Wasn't he? I almost was like, sometimes you see actors in these and you think, I wonder if at some point they're going to go, is it too soon for us to put him in another role because he was so good?
He was so good. Just his lines to them as well was like, Rizzoli and us, Baby Jane. He didn't even look at her when he was going, and you probably have Baby Jane helping you. Well, I never. I'm leaving. But I just thought
we're not the
wonderful.
Bad guys, Dash. I beg to differ. You're wearing flannel.
No. And he hunts pheasants.
Yes, that's right.
He had some great lines, and he delivered them beautifully. I thought he was every member of the cast was just wonderful. I thought they did such a great job at playing those parts, and I just was picturing them having the most fun trying to do that episode, because I don't know how they weren't perpetually cracking up at just the lines that they were having to listen to the other cast members saying. You know, it must have been so much fun. It was a real treat. And I've watched that episode a bunch because it was just that much fun.
And we had another wonderful scene. I should mention that it was one of Supernatural's two first assistant directors, Johnny McCarthy, who directed this episode. And it was similar in style to the earlier episode we had where Sam and Demon Dean were chasing each other through the hallways in the bunker. We had that great sort of hallway chase scene through the house, which was fantastic and very, very suspenseful. I mean, they loved that it turned from a comic episode into, you know, Sam then on the floor in the kitchen, which
sweating.
it reminded me of, I used to have many, many years ago, a friend who lived in a small house who had a Newfoundland dog. And when it would lie down in the kitchen looked like it was covered wall to wall in shag carpet because that's how big the dog was. And I was immediately, it reminded me of Sam. It's like, you know, Sam on the floor in your kitchen is wall to wall Sam.
Absolutely. Oh my gosh. And yeah, he was, yeah, that was great. I just, and of course he didn't have any silver bullets. She picked that straight away because he was just like having to hide. Exactly. He was just having to hide because there's nothing he could do about her. And it was, but I loved also the scenes in the hallways where Dean was like walking through the hallways and, you know, looking at the music. The score was wonderful. It was just perfect murder mystery whodunit kind of score. It was just wonderful. And Dean walking down the hall and looking at the suit of armor and, you know, and then the book and all that kind of stuff. But just with the music and everything, it was really gorgeous.
Yes, which
such was a good
great score by Jay Gruska.
Yeah, it was great.
One of our resident
geniuses,
resident composers. It captured that whole sort of, you know, Hercule Poirot, sort of, as I said, Agatha Christie, Dorothy Sayers type show very, very well. I did want to say a bit about shapeshifters, because this is one of those creatures, of course, that people often get forgetful, I will say generously, and confused over what the lore is, because of course, you know, the very first time we met a shapeshifter back in Skin with the, you know, iconic scene of the Dean shapeshifter, his skin comes off and
then his teeth
and his teeth and everything, and we see that again in Night Shifter, and so people often, and we saw it again here in that the shapeshifter left the a pile of goo. But there are, we have a also, of course, seen shifters who don't need to do that quite a number of times. Yep. Now, Supernatural often doesn't lay down its lore in, you know, you could say it's evolved over time, but we get bits of information over time. And so what we seem to have learnt is that there's a couple of things. As with the werewolves, the closer someone is to the alpha, the more control and more power they have. So as we saw with the werewolves, the closer they are to the alpha and to the that's if you like, undiluted with human blood line, then they aren't ruled by the phases of the moon and things like that. And I think we saw that with the Alpha Shapeshifter, who could obviously, you know, change shapes at the, you know, snap of a finger, so that, you know, there are shapeshifters who, you know, can change without having to do the whole gross skin shedding thing. So there is a variety in a monster communities, as there are in human communities. Well, I just wanted to pop that one in there. Yep. But you'll never forget, my favourite shifting was Bobby John, the shapeshifter baby.
Exploding baby.
Oh, so good.
That was so good. But then Bobby John was quite similar in this situation, in that Bobby John was the product of a human shifter mating, and so was what was her name? I'm forgotten in Wiki. Come on, Wiki. What was her name?
The
shifter's name.
Oh, in this episode,
yeah, Olivia.
Olivia. Yes.
And Olivia, it was the same thing. She was her mother had an affair with a shapeshifter, so she was the product of. She was half half. She was the product of that relationship. I thought that was actually really great.
Hence more goo.
And I thought that was really great that we had, you know, we'd seen that before. We'd seen that, you know, the shifter had a relationship with a woman before and had a shifter baby.
Yes.
And we saw it again, which I thought was really cool. I felt pretty bad for her that she'd been locked in the attic for all those years. So.
And it was interesting in our theme of, you know, the ongoing theme of who do you save, who's a monster. Mm-hmm. You know, in this case, she was a monster.
She was. And Sam was right. She had a choice. You know, you can choose to be whatever you want to be in this moment, but she did choose to be a monster. I did say, well, she was locked in the attic for
Yes.
Might screw with her head a little bit, you know, but anyway. But yeah, it was the ongoing theme that the show has dealt with, this theme, you know, since year dot, this ongoing theme of what constitutes being a monster. Is it something you're born to, or, you know, become because of your bitten or whatever, is it something that you choose to be? And can you choose not to be a monster, even if, you know, monster is what you are made of?
Yeah, and particularly we've already seen it this season with the return of Kate,
yes,
the werewolf, and the fact that, you know, they did let her go, and that she had shown that she was, you know, had really undertaken that struggle to, you know, not kill people and to do everything possible. As you say, she hadn't been kept in an attic for many years. And kept in an attic without a sibling to keep you warm,
yeah,
I said,
exactly.
Throwing in a flowers in the attic reference,
yes,
which will never not be funny.
Yeah.
Yes. One of the the other things that they planted through the through the episode was. So in the game Clue or Cluedo, there are iconic little items that you use. That are used as there's a word for it, like tokens of murder weapons. So there's a pipe, a wrench, a knife, a rope, and candlestick, other things. And they were all planted in the episode. So there was, I think, six of them, five of them. So, you know, that was a lovely, you know, I love those little Easter eggs in there.
That was great. But even just the fact that they had a pool table and include, there's like the pool room, the billiard room. And, you know, so there were those little things as well. You know, the library, they had the wall of books.
And, yeah, and the shout out to, there's a line about Mrs. Peacock and Colonel Mustard.
Yeah, Colonel Mustard, It's always Colonel Mustard with the candlestick in the conservatory.
I must say though, just getting back, just wanted to mention the wiki for a moment. And one thing is, one reason I got involved in the wiki was, you know, decoding all these pop culture references, and that, you know, no one person, unless you actually wrote the episode yourself, can ever come up with, you know, all the references that are there. And like, there was a reference to, well, in my mind, obscure, because I'd never heard of it, because if I haven't heard of it, it has to be obscure, doesn't it? A documentary about the Kennedys, which was referenced in a line about Grey Gardens. Now, I would never have...
I googled that.
Yeah, I mean, I would have had to as I usually do, is go through the script and get to the bits that I don't know and then Google it. But it was, you know, before I'd even blinked, you know, someone had been able to put that on the wiki. So I was like, oh, that's what it was.
Yeah,
so.
I was like, I didn't get, I knew it must have been something about older ladies.
Yeah.
And so I was just like, Grey Gardens. And so I Googled it and I did the same. I was like, what's Grey Gardens? Because I hadn't heard of that either.
So it's just, you know, when you start to go through it, there's just so many of those little references. Another favourite line of mine is when they call them homosexual murderers. Oh, that was hilarious. And then it was like Leopold and Loeb,
only hotter.
Who were actual real people in the 30s.
And was Rope based on that? Hitchcock's Rope?
And
that is my favourite Hitchcock movie.
And then if you're interested, there was a movie from the, I think it was the early 90s called Swoon, which was made about it too, which is excellent.
Oh, I'd like to see that. Rope is amazing. There's only one edit in that movie.
Yes, I love that.
And you can see where it is because he zooms into the. I love that movie so much. If you haven't seen Rope, you should see Rope.
You should. Watch both Rope and Swoon.
Amazing movie.
Considered sort of one of the beginnings of modern queer cinema. But anyway, a fascinating story, and also lovely to have Sam and Dean called homosexual murderers because it just amused me. It's like, what? Where did you get it? You know, probably because neither of them would sleep with Beverly and
Hedy. Yeah, exactly. But even at the beginning, like when they were like, and all the rooms have room for two, and like Sam's face is like, what are they saying exactly? And then the sister comes up and slaps Dean's ass. Oh, three. He's like, ooh. I loved his reaction too. Like when, you're adorable. And like, Sam's kind of like, oh my gosh, a bit uncomfortable. And Dean's like, ooh. He's so like, not ageist. I love it.
Opportunity.
He's like, woo, she's not bad. I'm in. Like, I love him.
Fun episode, except we have this moment of darkness, of course, when Dean shoots Olivia.
Shoots all the bullets into Olivia.
Yes.
And that was beautifully shot. I loved the way they shot the shooting. And just kept zooming in, you know, like, I mean, that probably is done in post, I should say. That they kept, in the edit, they jump, cut in to Dean's face tighter and tighter as with each of the bullets. And I love that. It made it all the more powerful. It looks super hot. I'm like, oh, Dean shooting people looks so hot. That's so bad. But he had his
sort of steely cold murderer face on.
Yeah, that's really hot. But and Dean, I think Sam had the same reaction as me, sort of cowering on the couch as Dean did that. And Sam was like, oh, jumping out of his skin on the floor and looking very,
that's
very
scary
worried.
And sort of hot.
Yeah, I was like, it's super scary and really hot. Now I'm not scared anymore. Oh my gosh. And then, of course, we also had the moment in the car where Sam asked Dean, you know, what was going on there. And I mean, I don't know how you read it. I didn't read it as Dean straight out lying. I read it as Dean just not really knowing.
I think there's a mixture there. I think he's
worried. He knows something's going on. He doesn't want to talk about it, doesn't want to admit it to himself. Yeah. I don't think he really knows. So
yeah, I think at that point, and this is his first kill since, and I think we probably won't know till later, you know, how much he knows or feels, and he may not have a clue. And it's a fine line between putting three silver bullets into a shapeshifter and putting six in, isn't it? Obviously he felt something there, and I think, you know, and we saw it and Sam saw it, that was beyond just putting the thing down. But it was that sort of sense of foreboding, and lovely shot at the end there. Wasn't that
another beautiful VFX.
Amazing job as we sort of zoom out from Sam in the car to the shot of the Impala going along the road. That was just like, oh, breathtaking.
Yeah, absolutely gorgeous.
That and a good decapitation.
Oh,
thank you to our wonderful VFX team. They should keep paying you guys. And so then that led into the next week's episode, which was this week's episode, Girls, Girls, Girls.
See, and everybody was like, oh, it's that Motley Crue song. And I'm like, oh, see, I totally thought of Elvis. He did a movie called Girls, Girls, Girls.
Yes, yes.
Girls in bikinis, girls, you know, yes. I know the song. And I was like straight up, Elvis, oh, yeah, it was Motley Crue. I totally, totally missed that one.
apparently it was originally going to be called Let It Go, but they decided to change that for because it was too Frozen-ish.
Yes.
So what did you think of Girls, Girls, Girls?
I enjoyed it, and it felt like, okay, I keep saying that what I've said is that I had like a romantic mini break with the boys, just me and the boys for 3 weeks on our own on our mini break. And now I feel like we kind of got back into the business, you know, because we got work to do and all that shit. But I really liked it. I thought all the storylines that we were following in it were great. And I was really surprising as well. The stuff that went down in this episode, I did not see that coming. I did not see any of that Hannah stuff coming for a mile. I would never have picked that as going to, you know, what happened with the Hannah character.
No, I certainly didn't either.
Not. I mean, the Rowena twist, I think all of us had that ball in the air, you know, due to the fact she was a Scot, she was a witch, you know. Crowley's mum, he's Scottish, his mum was a witch.
Yeah,
we so all had that, you know, that was not like a, oh my God, that was like, oh cool, they did go there, you know.
Yes.
For me, it was more like confirming what we were hoping would happen. But the Hannah thing, it was just, and it really got me to thinking, because, I mean, I don't think, I think Jimmy's gone, right? He's kind of been released. Or, I mean, has he?
Yes. Look, it was funny because I got a lot of questions on Twitter about this, and there was a lot of discussion. So I did go back to check the wiki, and we've had both, you know, it's been both pretty clear in the show. And you've got to remember, you know, Cass has been killed and exploded a number of times.
Yeah, he's been dead a bunch of times. And he's also inhabited that vessel completely graceless.
Yes. So, you know, look, wherever you mark the moment of Jimmy departing, and you might, you know, some people think it's at the end of Swan Song when Cass gets, you know, exploded. Then. It could be earlier. It could be when Raphael explodes him at the end of season 4. It could be many of the other times he dies.
I know, he's died a bunch of times.
I think, you know, the only sort of indications we've had of his presence was, of course, during season 5 when they encountered famine, and he goes through the whole eating burgers, and he says that comes from Jimmy's cravings. So
yep.
At that point, you could say, so in before the end of season 5,
Jimmy was still about.
There is some presence of him there, whether it's his soul or whatever. I would think, and then of course you remember later on after he does the whole angel banishing sigil carved into his own chest. Yes.
Oh, that was awesome. I'd forgotten about that. That was so cool.
And he gets found on a boat in the Gulf or something.
Oh, yeah, and then he's in hospital like a
human. He calls Jane from the hospital and says that he was brain dead, basically. The body was brain dead.
I just remember him saying, "You're not the broken shell of a man that I thought you were." that was awesome. That was an awesome one.
So, you know, it seems at that point possibly, but, you know, who knows? Misha had said at one point he thought Jimmy was still in Cass in season 6. Robbie Thompson certainly said last season that Cass was long, that Jimmy was long gone. So I don't know that we have an actual point in time, but I think we can certainly say now.
Yeah, that Jimmy's gone.
But, you know,
but it was really fascinating because it got it got me super thinking, because I've always kind of, I guess in my head I've always thought, you know, when this show finishes in the next, you know, like in 25 years when they wrap it up, you know, I've always kind of gone, I bet they finish just with the boys. You know, I wonder if they're going to wrap up all the characters' story. How would they wrap up Cass's story? And I never even considered that. Even when Jimmy was around, I never even considered you know, that he might release Jimmy. And then I was like, wow, that would have been really awesome, except that I don't think Jimmy's around anymore. And also, if he was awful, how awful would that be, that he would have been trapped in there?
Yeah.
And that was the other thing. It made me really think about, What the angels do with their vessels. I mean, I know that their vessels are devout, and I know their vessels say yes, have to say yes. But, you know, do they say yes to be being, you know, a vessel for like a year, you know, or forever? You know, it made it really clear that this was, it's almost like possession. You know, once they're in there, how do you get them out if you're still in there with them? And I found the whole thing super fascinating, because I hadn't really considered it before, and I loved that Hannah recognized that that she had, that Carolyn was still within her, and that Carolyn was having feelings, and that some of what she was feeling and these conflicted sort of weird human feelings that she was having, they didn't belong to her. She didn't own those feelings because she had Carolyn was still alive and, you know, sensing all this stuff and in pain inside her and seeing her husband or whatever and, you know, being in pain. I thought it was so surprising and, just something I never saw coming, and it was wonderful. It's got me really thinking. Like, I've thought about that quite a lot.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, of course, the whole issue of using people as vessels and their consent and what it does to you. I mean, that very much came up when Michael and Lucifer wanted to, you know, to possess both Sam and Dean, and you know, there was all that work in trying to get them to say yes. And so, but it does appear that once you say yes, you know, basically that's it's consent forever. And of course, we saw it with Gadriel possessing Sam last season.
And we saw actually what saying possessed by Raphael did to that guy, left him a drooling mess.
Yes.
When he bugged out.
So, you know, and I think that's been, you know, the angels and demons have always been portrayed, I think, as, you know, in a way, flip side, if not, you know, different sides of the same coin.
Yeah, definitely.
Of not being that far removed. You know, they're both using humans for, you know, their own ends, and that was obviously, you know, a conscious decision on the part of the writers. You know, they could have had them just manifesting, which, you know, where it's made clear from, you know, Castiel's first appearance that no, he's actually possessed someone. So yeah, it's very interesting. I think the bigger thing, I mean, I think from the individual level is fascinating, and obviously we saw that impact then that it had on Cass as well, in terms of, you know, Googling Jimmy to see what was out there. But also it brings back to this whole issue of, you know, what is the angel's role? You know, the mission that they were sold they were meant to have for millennia was to be looking after
humans,
you know, the humans as you know, supposedly God's ultimate creation, and that was corrupted over time, certainly after, you know, God decamped and, you know, it became corrupted, and that's become certainly a, you know, not on the table as one of the first agenda items at the Heaven's committee meetings. So I think that's another big point of bringing back, well, what are we doing? If, you know, we're getting heaven sorted out and getting the rogue angels off Earth, but, you know, then what is our ultimate goal? And again, you know, do the ends justify the means?
I love that Hannah actually thought that through, and she actually said, you know what is our purpose? Our purpose is we're supposed to love and care for humanity. And here I am essentially holding this person hostage. Mm. You know, certainly she said yes, but, you know, she's holding her hostage when there's this whole other life that this person that is inside her has, and these people who love her and miss her, and she's people that she loves and misses, and she's feeling pain because of that. And you know, I thought it was really cool that Hannah was like going, you know, we're supposed to be caring for these people. What are we actually doing here?
And they're the very similar sort of moral dilemmas that, you know, Sam and Dean face all the time of, you know, who do you sacrifice for the greater good? Because obviously they've moved, you know, very far from the first season where they thought they could do what they do without that happening. And now they're a lot more pragmatic about, you know, breaking eggs to make omelets. And there's a lot less angst over, you know, the collateral damage of, you know, killing, you know, the meat suits that demons are in, and even killing humans. So I think, you know, it's again another interesting mirror of, you know, the humans are thinking about this. You know, hell, we even saw Crowley draw a line in the sand and say that, you know, the sex, you know, sex trade, you know, forced sex trade was too far, was a line too far for him.
Yeah, it was, so, it was just, what did he say, tacky or something, didn't he, or crass, or, yes. I don't know, yeah. It was a little bit, that was pretty full on, but yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So it'll be interesting how this, I mean, obviously there's a personal dimension here for Cass and what happened to, you know, the Novaks, Amelia and Claire Novak, but also I wonder where he then sees, well, you know, what's heaven's raison d'etre these days then?
Because,
Sounds like there's only a few rogue angels left, so...
And really, Cass was kind of roped into that one by Hannah. That wasn't actually his, like, purpose or goal or anything that he was really interested in getting involved in initially.
I partly think that was because also he was
graceless. But, you know, Yeah, I know, but he was very wary about forcing these angels back, you know, being as he's Mr. Free Will in the angel world, you know what I mean? He's kind of experienced what it's like to actually live the life that he kind of chooses and not have to follow the rules of heaven. So he was, I saw him as quite conflicted in joining in Hannah's, you know, war against bringing the angels back. And so it's interesting now that she was the one really driving that, and certainly initially she was the one who was driving it, and now she's left. You know, it kind of left me with this sense of what is Cass going to do now? You know, interestingly, straight away he's looking up the Novak family because obviously, I mean, he's, you know, he feels so much these days. Cassio, obviously, everything that Hannah and then having Carolyn there with him, everything that he's seen in that has made him think of his own vessel and his own vessel's family and the impact that he's had on his vessel and his vessel's family. But I also got to thinking, you know, well, what is going to be, how is he going to find a purpose now? What is going to be his purpose moving forward? I mean, I think it's really interesting that Carver said how personal this season is going to be, because it is so personal. It feels very intimate. And I thought that this episode in particular felt very, very intimate. It was a very personal journey for all of the characters in it, even for Sam and Dean.
And for Cole, of course.
And for Cole. Cole's so wonderful. Like, can we just take a moment? I mean, Travis Aaron Wade has just blown me away in that role.
His scenes with Jen, the two major scenes he's had with Jensen
have just been
stunning. And also that scene he had with Jared when he had Sam tied up. But particularly those two scenes with Jensen, both very intense emotional scenes.
But just a really stunning scenes. He's done such a wonderful job with that. And in this jumping scenes, but in when he had the conflict with Dean, you know, you could just see him trying to process through his, you know, all these emotions, what Dean was saying. And Dean was right, you know, that had become his story. We all have stories. And that had become his story. And letting go of your story after however many years is such a hard thing to do. You know, he has lived this story. This has defined him. And he was being asked to release that and let that go. And I thought you could see that all over his face. It was really wonderful. It was such a personal experience for him. It was personal for Dean, you know, having to tell the boy essentially whose father he killed, you know, what was behind it, and it felt very personal and intense for him. And then
What did you think about the fact that Dean literally put his life in Cole's hands?
I thought that I actually felt like he I didn't see that as suicidal. I know I think some people were kind of like, oh, he just was what was he doing? Was he hoping? I did kind of go, oh my God, don't give him the gun. But then I didn't think Cole would do that. I think Dean is an excellent reader of character.
Yeah.
Personally, I think he knows people. He can read them really, really well. And I think he probably knew that if he could talk to Cole. He could get Cole to
big
see
gamble
it.
To take.
It's
though.
A huge gamble.
This is a man he's met twice. The first time he was a demon and smashed the shit out of him.
Yeah, that
now
was
the
awesome.
Guy's turned up again. He's got a lifetime of revenge. I think it was, you know, I certainly think whatever's Dean, you know, belief in his own persuasive abilities. I was a bit disturbed that he would.
Well, look, I won't say that I wasn't disturbed too. I was as well. I was like, I think Dean probably thought he could talk to him, but I think he probably didn't care too much if he couldn't. But I think that comes from a long thing of Dean, and I think that, you know, this is not new behavior from Dean. This, you know, I think every single time something Dean does something or goes through something, like now he's gone through the demon, he's got this mark of Cain, and you know he's feeling it. He must be feeling it. And I think he's really scared that he's just going down that road again, that everything that happened to him last season, to us last season, is, you know, going to happen to him again. And I think he's shit scared. And I think that not talking in Ask Jeeves, I think in not talking to Sam about that really showed to me just fear. He just is really frightened of what's going on, because I think he can probably feel it. So, yeah, I agree with you. I think it was kind of twofold. It was kind of like, I'm going to do this because I think I can talk to this man, but on the flip side, if he tops me, then he tops me. Because you know, I know we've talked about this before. I think we've talked about you sort of didn't feel like Dean is full of self-hate, whereas I actually do feel like he really does not like who he is and who he's been over the years. I think he has so many things that he wishes didn't happen and that he didn't do, that I think he just can't get past a lot of that. It's guilt and it's grief and it's hating what he's done and hating what he had to become, and I think he gets really clouded by all of that. And for me, you know, standing in front of a guy whose father he killed, who was then turned into basically turned into like John Winchester, you know, Cole was on a mission
hunting his father.
Exactly, yeah. He was exactly the same thing, and he's got a family at home, and you know, I think Dean can see all that, and yeah, I agree with you. I do think he probably initially thought he could talk him around, but I think on the flip side, he probably didn't care much if he couldn't. But I think that's very
Dean. There was
certainly
a degree of fatalism.
Fatalism, yeah, I agree. But I tell you one thing I did love in that whole exchange was that when Sam came with the gun and Dean's like, just put it down, Sammy, put it down. The moment between Sam and Dean there, I thought was really spoke about where they are now and that level of trust that has been reborn between them, because Sam was willing, mind you, he obviously had Cole, you know, nailed. He would have taken him down as quick as look at him, but I think, you know, like, there was just Sam trusted Dean in that moment Dean asked.
Yes, definitely. And, you know, I think the other big moment, of course, was Dean admitting for the, you know, sort of the first time explicitly that he knew that there are people who love him, that he said, you know, that he refers to...
He said the love word, man.
Yes, and that, you know, admitting that, you know, what Cass and Sam did for him in undemonizing him was because they love him. Now, that's, you know, and I think that's something for a long time, well, certainly when he was younger, that I think he thought he was unlovable, that I think he thought his value to John Winchester was as a hunter and as someone to look after Sam, but I don't think he thought it was something that people, you know, could love him for him. I think that was a big thing, and so he can.
Huge.
Yeah, I think, and just, you know, obviously there's also a strategic role in you know, using those sort of words with Cole, but. Yeah,
but I didn't see it like that. I mean, I think that was a massive thing for Dean to say, and I think it was recognition within himself that, as you say, there are people that love him and they have brought him back, and he can see this young man in front of him who's got people who love him as well.
Yeah, and he was, of course, saying it to Sam.
And he was saying it to Sam. And that's the thing. I mean, Sam was there listening, and he may as well, you know, Cole may as well have just stepped the hell out of the way in that moment. He was saying it to Sam, and it was like, you know, him saying, I know you love me and I'm really thankful for what you did for me, without him saying it, because God knows a Winchester is never going to ever say something like that. But he basically said that to Sam. He knew Sam was standing there listening. And that was the thing. I thought Sam wasn't just listening, he was actually hearing. Mm. I just felt like even the end scene when Sam said to him, you know, why did you say that stuff? And Dean blew it off, and we all knew he was blowing it off. We knew that what he was saying to Sam, he was just covering, you know, oh, I just said what he needed to hear, you know, come on, let's go. Even that closing shot of them walking up the lane, and Sam's behind Dean, and it just gave me such a sense.
I've got your back.
I've got your back. You know, I am behind you 100% of the way, no matter what happens. I thought that's I'm going to cry. I thought that scene was beautiful.
It was. And, you know, it also, though, was complex, because you've got Dean saying, I know I'm able to be loved. I know how I have people who love me enough to, you know, go to extremes to save me. Yet, on the other hand, I'm being fatalistic and, you know, I'm in this situation
I'm trying
to sort it out. You know, in some ways I find that more disturbing, because it's not just Dean in a everything's hopeless you know, there is no coming back from the darkness, because he's demonstrating he is in touch with some of the good stuff. So it was wonderfully written, and look, I thought the whole episode from Bob Behrens, you know, that guy's definitely a keeper, because I thought he balanced, you know, we haven't even talked about Rowena and the girls yet, but, you know, there were four storylines really going on here.
They balanced really beautifully.
Felt rushed. Felt like we got some really...
disjointed, or like,
really nice space. You know, the whole Cass and Hannah on a bridge, for God's sake. I mean, that felt like it had so much space, yet it wasn't. And, you know, even the opening scene, you know, having an opening scene that was, you know, wonderfully full of Dean and his dating app, which was hilarious.
That was beautiful. Oh, my God. But I think the thing was, it was a lovely, lovely character piece. You know, like, we got a really good sense of all the characters, maybe not so much of Crowley, because we didn't really see a lot of Crowley, but we know that he won't, you know, stoop to prostitution. At least that's something we can say about it.
Well, and we got the whole meeting his
mother.
The mother bit.
But, I really felt like it was a beautiful character piece, but I think that that's really quite representative of Bob Behrens's writing. I think that the episodes that he has done for Supernatural have been very tight character, you know, like they've had a lot of great story around them, but we've really got to feel a lot about the characters and where the characters are, whether they've been characters that we know, like Mrs. Tran, or, you know, even Kevin in ghost form, or the boys, or whether it's been new characters like the girl living with the vampires in that one. You know, we got a really good sense of them. So though those episodes seem to have a lot of story, and this episode had a lot of story, there was a lot going on, it never felt like we sacrificed what I think makes the show
rushed.
Great. Which
it
is
didn't
the
feel rushed.
Stuff.
It didn't feel like we were just, having plot after plot. There really felt like a lot of space there for the, you know, for the character moments, and the fact that we had, you know, we had laughs, we had, you know, horror, we had, you know, deep and meaningfuls. Let's go back to the dating app for a moment, because that dropped in the sneak peek.
I can't believe that, because, like, I was like, when we saw it in, what was it, the promo for something, I was like, oh, there's no way, it's got to be something different. And then it turned out to actually be a dating app. I was like, I love you, Dean Winchester, more than I can even say in words. Like, and just when I think I can't love Dean Winchester anymore, I fall head over heels and love again.
The wonderful story behind it was that at Comic-Con this year, on the panel, the guests were asked by someone from the audience what would be on your character's dating profile. And Jensen said, rolling through town, no strings attached, interested.
I can love Jensen Ackles anymore, I fell in love with him all over.
And when I couldn't think I can love Bobbo anymore, Bob Behrens was in the audience at that time. He was working on
gold.
The script. He thought, I'm going to use that. So there's some sort of perfect storm happening
there. It was. And like to be honest, I've actually started writing it, and I will write it. But I couldn't stop thinking about how Dean took the photo.
Oh, yes.
I'm like, oh, my God, he must have used a self-timer. And it's so perfect. And I must have done it while Sam was sleeping. And, you know, so it's all gone through my head.
Some people had the theory I quite like that Crowley had taken it.
Yeah.
So. It was on one of their jaunts somewhere that Crowley had taken it, or that Dean had
stopped
someone random to take it.
I'm going with he popped a little his self-timer. There's actually a self-timer app that you can put on your phone, and he popped it on a rock outside the bunker because I know I've been there. There's rocks, so that's I'm going with that one.
Forward to reading it.
Yeah, I'm halfway through it.
Speaking of the bunker, I was rather concerned that he listed the location.
Oh my God.
Of where he lived.
Dude, it's like, secret lair.
Dean. Don't do that. Don't tell everyone.
That. You know, and not only that, he's using his real name. There are demons out there who know who you are. Who knows? Maybe they're dating demons. But, yeah, it was wonderful.
Also, a number of people mentioned, of course, you know, law enforcement, although I'm pretty sure most of them don't have, unless the NSA is cross-referencing all databases, pretty sure it's pretty safe there.
Yeah, I do too. But you're right, you know, they've been pretty much wanted forever.
But it was just the thought of Dean adorably being on a dating app for hookups.
And I just love that he was like, so I loved when Sam read out one of the.
Oh, Sam mocking Dean was the best ever. Like, I love them.
That was so great. But I really also loved how Sam's going, dude, you know, like she reads it out and Dean's like really proud, gets raunchier.
But the whole, you know, privacy things when you know
and stuff. Privacy and stuff.
Yeah, that's gone out the window years ago.
I know. I was like, what? You left your phone on the table.
Well,
dude.
I was going to say, you know, and it sort
pop
of
it in your pocket.
Hints at the fact that, you know, they probably mess with each other's phone
all the time. Yeah. I thought it was lovely. And poor Dean, though. He did think he was going to get laid.
That was a bit sad.
I was a bit sad face for him. I was like, oh, damn, his little face. I was like, oh, I'm sad for him now.
I hope he's still got his dating app up.
I do too. I hope he has his dating app going. I think that they should just put one up there. I think the CW should do it. They should create a dating app for Dean.
Just for Dean?
Yeah.
I should go and check out OkCupid something now and see if it's up there. What's is it? Tinder.
Tinder, Impala 67. You can look on Tinder. Stop. That's funny.
I think I'd have to sign up for it.
I think Sam needs to sign up. Sam desperately needs to sign up.
Yes. Boy, if he doesn't get laid, that pain of death is going to backfire on him.
But yeah. I went to a whole other place then.
Introduction of the wonderful Rowena.
Yeah, she was great.
Oh my God, Ruth Cannell, you are absolutely adorable.
She's tiny. She's tiny.
Well, she said on Twitter that her IMDb profile says she's 5'3", but she thinks it's lying.
She's tiny. I'm like, my gosh, she's so small. When Dean put the gun at her outside, I was like, look at the size of her. She's tiny weeny.
Absolutely, but she was, and look, this show loves its redheads. I am going to do a page on the wiki of Supernatural Redheads.
I can appreciate it.
And this is actually the actor's first role in North America, which
is
addedly awesome. And there's a couple, have a look, people, there's a couple of really good interviews out there with her about how much fun she's had working on the show. And I thought she was just, you know, if you're going to introduce a new baddie,
she was delicious.
Wonderful. And that scene in the dungeon where you go, you know, Crowley's there stun-faced and she's taunting him.
I just loved when she said, wee boy. As soon as she said, wee boy, wee boy. I've got to say, my grandmother's Scottish, so my mum's half Scottish, and a redhead, I might add. And I have brought up on that. So I say wee this, wee that, wee. My mum says, well, oh, it's a wee this. And so when she said wee boy, I was like, oh my God, she is totally his mother if she's saying that.
And that whole bit where she said, cat's got your tongue, and she went meow. The meow was ad-libbed, apparently, which I thought was just delicious. So, look, I cannot wait to see Rowena and Crowley together. And
telling him to pick up his room. Don't you think?
Either they're going to be they're going to join forces, and that's going to be seriously bad shit for the rest of everyone, or they're going to be at each other's throats.
I reckon each other's throats. I have a feeling. But does that make her the Dowager Queen of Hell?
Well, yeah, I don't know. I mean, the interesting thing, of course, is that if she's obviously very old, but she might want to hang out
that
now.
To her. She might not.
She's not a demon. She is a witch, remember?
Yeah, I know. I don't understand that, but that's okay.
Well, we know that witches are very long-lived as well.
Oh, that's right. We've met. Patrick.
And, Spike and Cordelia.
Cordelia, yeah. I know exactly.
Yes, the Starks, Maggie and Phil Stark, because they'd been...
Spike and Cordelia.
Well, I'm sure our listeners get the reference.
No, that was perfect.
It was Maggie and Don Stark, that's right. And they,
Spike and Cordelia worked better.
They'd been in a relationship for over 800 years.
Well, that's true. And also even the witches in it's the Great Pumpkin, Sam Winchester, that they had been around for a while.
Oh, yes. And the Chris Angel is a douchebag. I mean, they were over 100 years old. Yeah. But anyway, enough about how old witches are. We will look forward to seeing what Rowena gets up to and what role she's got to play, because, as I said, of course, here we are only in the first quarter of the third of the season. We don't really have a big bad, so to speak. So
I like that,
I mean,
it.
I think it, as you said before, it gives us the chance that we can have episodes where we have them every season, but sometimes you're more aware that in the background the Leviathans are there, or the apocalypse is going to happen.
Lucifer's there,
or Sam's possessed by Gadriel, or those sort
other
of things
going on
are going on. Which Metatron's trying to bring everything down.
He's still out there.
He's in jail. Yeah. So it's nice to be at this point and have absolutely no idea, and really beyond the vague synopsis for the next couple of episodes, I don't have any clue what's happening in the new year.
No clue. And I think that's lovely. You're at a show, it's over 200 seasons, so you've been watching since...
Episodes, darling.
Episodes.
We're not as long-lived as witches. Some people might say fangirls are, but no, we're not as long-lived as witches.
No, over 200 episodes, and, having been watched since episode one, and you still don't have any idea what's going to happen next, and that's pretty special. I think that's pretty great.
Well, and that, a way to keep the show fresh is to, although there's a rough, template for each season, having a season like this where there isn't an obvious... apocalypse type event that they're battling. We've got as Carver said, we've got these more personal things. What's Cass going to do in terms of his mission? What's he going to do in looking for the Novax? What's Dean going to do about the Mark of Cain? How is Sam going to deal with that?
He's going to be awesome.
What's going to happen with Rowena and Crowley? Who knows?
I have no idea, but she was great. I really enjoyed her. So she'll be fun, I'm sure. She was super fun.
Oh, she was. And I just, yes, I, yeah, the characters like that, I mean, you know, as we saw with Abaddon, are just delicious and play so well against Crowley as well. And it's yeah. I think, you know, having Mark Sheppard as Crowley, they set a pretty high bar for themselves in finding worthy adversaries in terms of the plot, but also in terms of actors as well. Mm-hmm. So I think they've done very well here.
Yeah,
so
super cool.
And of course, don't forget, just in terms of the Crowley's family, we've still got his son out there somewhere.
Yes,
so, you know,
my gosh.
Gavin could come back into play at some
grandson.
Point. So maybe, you know, grandma and grandson could team up together.
Ooh, that's cool. I like that idea. I hadn't thought that one through at all.
No, don't worry. I'm keeping
planning.
Well, you know, it was just obvious that, and whether they had a plan for him or not.
Well, that's got to be a plan. Well, yeah.
No, exactly. No, I think it could have just been, let's leave him in the present day, could be useful.
Later,
You know, if nothing, it's not so big that if we never hear from him again, I care. It's not like it was like, oh, my God, he's going to explode in, you know, a year's time or anything. but he's there if they want to use him.
Yeah, and you've got to think if they're getting the Crowley. Well, what was he, MacLeod? Fergus MacLeod, was that?
Yes.
Crowley family back together. Maybe they will bring Crowley's son in. That would be cool. That'd be interesting. Anyway, it was a very cool episode. There was a lot going on, and it gave me a lot to think about. I must admit that I watched it and I was like, ooh, and I pondered a lot of stuff around angels and things like that afterwards. I thought it was really great.
Yes, and again, big snaps to Robert Behrens for an absolutely
very nice episode.
Absolutely wonderful script. I think he writes, he writes all the characters brilliantly.
Really lovely, yeah.
And he's funny too. So he did. He live tweeted the East Coast feed of Supernatural. He was a bit drunk for the West Coast feed.
I love how he said when he was live tweeting the West Coast feed that he, you know, like it was tricky because he'd already done the East Coast feed, and it was like, yeah, he felt like he was, and he was drunk. But apart from that, he was like, but I feel like I'm repeating myself.
Which he was, but that was okay.
I didn't see it. Actually, I need to go back. Did you storify it all?
I didn't end up storifying the West Coast tweets because there really wasn't any. All the interesting stuff was on the East Coast. So most of the West Coast stuff was just him and the actors going, wow, that was good. I had other fish to fry, so I let that one go.
And it's only two eps to the mid-season finale.
Yes, so we've got spoiler alert, people. Just going to mention the next two episodes. So turn off now and join us again after those. But
Don't turn us off. What are you doing?
So next week we've got the wonderful Heat-inspired Jodie and Donna team up.
I'm so looking forward to this.
Oh, my God, I can't.
I love Jodie. She's, like, wonderful. Kim is just wonderful. And Donna was one of my favourite characters from last season. She was marvellous.
Brianna Buckman.
Beautiful.
And,
it's going to be great.
Lovely on Twitter. And basically the story was that EP and director Phil Segrecia just fell in love with her work during The Purge and was like, you know, we got to find a way to – you know, bring her back and have her in another episode. So I think he gets a story credit along with Jenny Klein,
yes,
who wrote the episode. So, you know, that's a great testament to Brianna's acting and, you know, how she just made that character, you know, pop off the screen and everyone adore her. So, yes, very much looking forward to that. And then we go into the hiatus with another bit of so Cass tracks down Claire Novak, calls on the boys for help. Something happens with the Market Cane. I think that's about all I know.
What I know is I've got a half day that day.
Oh, I'm taking.
Are you taking it off?
We'll see.
I've actually got an official half day that I could take at any point in time. It was like it had other reasons around it, but I was like, you know what, I'm going to take that day because it's like this. I think it's also the Sons of Anarchy series final that day, isn't it?
I think you're right.
Yeah, unless they, I think
you would be right because they had this week off.
They had this week off. Yeah, so I was like, oh my god, I know, which was even more reason. So,
God, you might need the following day off to have a lie down. I think.
I think I probably will.
For people who don't watch Sons of Anarchy, it's gonna end bloody.
It's gonna end very bloody. Well, is anything gonna change then? Because every week is bloody. Whatever.
Although the body count this season's been higher than ever.
Amazing. More blood on Jack's white shoes than usual. Yes, but I have got that afternoon off, so I won't be home in time to watch the East Coast feed unless I can scarp a super early, but that's not really a half day. But I will be watching the West Coast feed, and I'm very much hoping that we have some Ackles tweetage. Because, as I said to you earlier, I do love a bit of Ackles tweetage.
I hope so, yes. I hope we do. I think we're due some episode tweeting from him and seeing it's the last episode of the season. Of course, it always depends whether they're filming or not.
Well,
because
that's right. They'll be right at the end of the season.
Working at that time. So, yes, and that's written by Andrew Dabb, and I can't remember who directed it now. Guy B, that's right.
Yes, that's right. That'll be great.
I did just want to say the directing, Bob Singer's directing in this week's episode. God, I love his work.
I love it when Bob's directing.
The fact that he can go for it. I mean, excuse me, I forget the technical term for it. Close up on Crowley at the end was just...
Yeah, when he ramped it forward at the end.
Yes.
That was really great. But, yeah, I mean, I was excited to see him directing. I mean, he's just such an experienced director, and you can see it. It's really lovely. He does lovely work, and it was a really tight episode.
Well, and things like you can go from the gorgeous scene on the bridge with Hannah and Katz where it's all pretty open and horizontal, and then you've got that lovely tight down the alleyway scene with all the reds and that. I mean, that was probably Serge's lighting there, but that lovely – and Bob loves an aerial shot too, so up on the crane and down.
And it was a long shot too. That actually went for a really long time. When you watch it – well, really long time in TV land. When you watch it, it's not like, oh, just a quick shot. It's a really languid shot. Yeah. Of watching them walk up the alley.
Yeah, he kept that emotional beat there. And even earlier – and I didn't pick up on this, but I think it might have been Ryan Curtis who commented the scene with Dean and Cole and Sam. You know, there were points where the blocking was the three of them were sort of stacked in, you know, Dean in the foreground, Cole in the midground, and Sam in the background. And like just things like that. I think he's brilliant. We're very lucky to have him directing as well as writing. I love our show, Amy.
I love our show too. I love it a lot.
It's an amazing season this season. I have to say, I thought this was going to be a good episode, but I thought it was going to be perhaps a lighter episode, or I wasn't expecting something which, you know, it's going to be up. It's currently up there with one of my favourites for the season.
It was great. Well, there just hasn't been an episode this season where I haven't gone, oh gosh, that was just fabulous. This season has been remarkable.
Yeah.
It's the 10th season. It's ridiculous, but it's better than it has been. I mean, it's always wonderful, but you know what I mean? It feels new.
Yeah. And look, you know, I want to acknowledge the wonderful work done by Erica Carroll as Hannah, who you know, basically.
I wonder if she'll be back.
Who knows? Who knows? I mean, probably difficult now that, you know, it'd be pretty mean of her to come back and take Carolyn again. But she could come back in another vessel, unfortunately, for Erica Carroll. But, you know, again, came in for what was, you know, a very minor role for the first couple of episodes she was in. You know, she basically had a couple of lines, and then this season, you know, has become, you know, a much more significant character, and I think has just...
It's been a really interesting
character. And then we ended up with this incredibly moving farewell, and the fact that, you know, I love the dynamic between her and Cass, in that no one else, you know, if she was with any other angel, this probably wouldn't have happened.
No.
But it's because, you know, she was that lovely reminder of how far Cass has come, you know, because she reminded you of early Cass, you know, not getting the references, being the good soldier, staying on the mission. And it was being around Cass that I think, made her more open to the things she was perhaps feeling from Caroline and being more questioning. So, you know, there's that sort of, in some ways, she's then, you know, found her own path from that. But it then reflects back on Cass and where's his path now.
And I felt really sad for, I felt super sad for Cass, because I really felt like with Hannah, I thought, wow, he's actually found an angel who doesn't want to stab him in the heart and, you know, who he can talk to and who he can trust and who trusts him in return and respects him in return. And there was such a nice dynamic between them that I felt like, oh, yay, Cass has got this, you know, this person that can relate directly to him because she is the same as him, you know, in so many ways. So I think her leaving, you know, was impacted me in a way as well, because I was like, oh gosh, now Cass is really, I felt like he was really alone in that scene in the car. And I mean, I know he's got Sam and Dean out there, you know, and that he'll always have them, but there was something about having that level of connection with an angel, which we haven't really seen him have, because, you know, he's been on the outs with the angels for so long.
And having that, he killed Balthazar, so, you know, they got rid of that friend.
Yeah, that was the only friend he really ever had, and, you know, in the angel universe. And, you know, so I was really sad on that level as well.
Well, I think Cass is in a sad place at the moment. I mean, he is super a bit sad. Lost. What is his role? Is he going to, you know... He obviously showed his reluctance at last season at becoming a leader of the Angels, and he did what he had to do to sort of end the war, and then withdrew again to some extent. And as you said, you know, Hannah sort of brought him back into this mission of you know, getting the remaining angels off Earth. But yeah, what is his role? Does he, you know, go back and join Sam and Dean and become a hunter? Does he go back to heaven? Does he, you know, stay on Earth and do, you know, like, and I feel that? He feels a bit disconnected. He feels now, I think, with Hannah gone, it will be interesting to see what his relationship, and maybe that will draw him back to,
into Sam, you know, and Dean's world.
Yeah, into the boys and they'll need him, of course, depending on how his grace goes, because we know from every encounter the boys have had that witches are fucking incredibly powerful.
Yeah.
And I could be wrong, but I don't think they've ever actually killed a witch. So they've never, you know, it's always been something else has undone the witches, or they've left, or something's happened, but they've never killed or beaten the witches themselves. So, you know, they're facing something, you know, someone with potentially...
And massively powerful.
Yes. And if she's, you know, if she, as I said, if she and Crowley join forces, of course, we know he has complex feelings about the Winchesters. So who knows how
about moose and not moose?
But we have many, many episodes left of this season. So I can't wait to see where it goes.
Me too. It's so exciting.
So we'll probably be back in a fortnight after the final episode.
I would say so, yeah.
Maybe do a bit of a after that. We'll do a bit of a look back over the season 9
recap so far. Yep,
10.
That's wonderful. 10 season 10. What the hell? Where did I just went back a year?
We're back. We're at that point in time where there's so many seasons we forget where we are.
Hard to give track of.
Oh, okay, awesome. Thank you very much for listening. Drop us a line on Twitter if you've got any comments. Abuse or compliments,
abuse.
And oh well. Look,
don't
I'll
drop
take
us line if you have abuse. How could you abuse us?
No one ever abuses us. Possibly because half of them don't understand our accent. That's okay.
They only get every fifth word.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. I heard Sam Dean pass the rest of it. Just gobbledygook. Thanks for listening. I've been Jules, and
I've been Amy, and thanks so much for listening. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Women of Letters podcast. If you'd like to contact us, our email is wolspn@gmail.com. You can follow Amy on Twitter @AmyInSydney and Jules @SuperWiki.